They all but Jack jump on, and then the door busts open. Mombi's there, and then she's like, "What?
Dorothy Gale?"
And then she keeps screaming her full name.
It's almost like in Oz, people just say, "I've been Dorothy."
Right? Like, ah, Dorothy. She turns around and is like, "Well, I guess I'll make do with what I got right now," and turns and sees a robot.
And what does this robot look like?
Okay, so he's short and squat, and he has a little hat on that's like a round, you'd almost call it a bowler's hat, but there's no crease in it. It's like a round cap with a brim, like 2-inch brim, right?
His hat reminds me of some soldier hats from like the early 1900s.
Yeah, it's almost like a pith helmet type of deal.
Yeah.
And he's round. He looks like if a gumball machine had a baby with the Michelin man, and then he got chromicized in copper.
Right. And Dorothy finds some instructions on the back.
Okay, so this is where my notes say, "She ain't real. She ain't real. She reads directions and has no fear of spider webs." She ain't real.
He's covered in spider webs. And that's kind of the thing about this Emerald City, is that it's so abandoned, or it's not really dilapidated. It's just like, it is pretty dilapidated, actually.
It's busted down. It could not have been just 6 months. Time must move different in the human world and then Dorothy's world.
Right.
And she starts reading the directions on him, and it's like, "Keep wound." And this, it says Army of Oz.
Patent pending.
Keep wound, and it will be in good repair for the next 1,000 years. And then she reads the directions. Wind this gear to get its brain going. Wind this gear to get its...
Speech going.
Wind here to get its movement going.
And my whole note was, can we clean off some of the cobwebs? Because she just goes right into turning and doesn't clean anything off. And I'm like, maybe it's the cleaner in me, but I'm like, we could just like grab some of those and shoo them away.
Yeah, but she's in panic mode, I think, and you operate different depending on the situation. But she's like, "Well, I guess I'll get his mind going first." And then I mean, Belina says something, it doesn't really matter. We'll ask him. Maybe if we get a speech going, crack, 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 crack. And so they, smartly, she doesn't turn on his physical action until they have a conversation.
Wasn't that in the instructions, though? They said first do his brain, then do his mouth, and then do his action.
I don't remember. Yeah. But it's smart regardless. He wakes up. I say, she relates the situation. He's like, "Well, I was shoved in here by the scarecrow, and he told me to wait for you, and now here you are." And so this is TikTok, and he is amazing. He is top three favorite characters for me of the entire film. And he is super cute. And we looked up. Okay, so I've described you to him. He's about 4 feet tall because he's shorter than she is. And she's a very little girl. And while we were watching this the second time together, I looked up a picture of what the guy looks like in the uniform. And so, okay, so imagine you were bent over and your arms were wrapped behind your knees, right? That's the position the person working the puppet had to be in as he moved around. So he shaped himself like a mushroom, shoved himself in TikTok, and was like, wah, 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 around on 2 feet.
Yeah, this is a gymnast named Michael Sundin.
But in
That's
the image...
a good Sean fact, by the way. Thanks.
Yeah, in the image that you found looks like he's a contortionist, and he's walking around on his hands.
Well, it's his feet in there, but his arms are like wrapped around his body.
Okay.
I think I kept the picture up.
Sean said it was as he was walking on his hands.
His hands were in there, but his feet are in the feet part.
All right.
I mean, like, his hands are definitely down in there. Like, he has to be crammed. Imagine trying to make yourself shorter than 4 feet tall because you got another foot and a half-ish of costume on top of you that also has all these machinations in it to make it blink and move and stuff. Like... yeah, I feel like when he's walking, there's a guy in the suit, but when he's standing still, they must be operating him remotely or as a puppet.
Right.
Because there's no way that he could function with all of that in there all at the same time.
Well, and the scenes of TikTok walking look very distinct. He doesn't move around too much in the leg area, so I think that makes sense. Who voices TikTok? Isn't that Roy Deep?
No, Deep Roy.
Deep Roy, sorry.
No, he's a different mechanical person.
He voices the Tin Man?
The Tin Man doesn't have a voice.
He's inside of the Tin Man.
Oh. He's just the puppet operator of the Tin Man.
Oh.
It's perfect. Okay, but here's the thing. They talk about what's going to happen. She's like, there are wheelers outside. And he's like, oh, those are bad news. And she's like, my notes are here, say, he's got a plan and gorgeous eyes.
All right, so it's Michael Sundin inside of TikTok. Tim Rose remotely controls TikTok. And Sean Barrett does the voice of TikTok.
All right.
Makes sense. Okay, so...
yeah, TikTok asks Dorothy for her lunch pail and they head out. And so they're walking through this long hallway. And as they get right out there, the wheelers all surround them. And
TikTok, like, he goes, get up those stairs. And I'm like, your answer was stairs because they're called wheels. It's hard to do wheels and stairs. And he's like, get up them stairs, girl. And then he just starts spinning and spinning and spinning.
That's his, like, one attack is just to spin. Of course, they don't move. They all kind of, like, attack him at once. And he's just like, woo.
He's spinning with the pail in his hand. He starts smacking him with the lunch pail. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
So there's moments where this movie just terrified me as a child. But then seeing, like, moments like this, I mean, I was like... okay. I mean, the terror of these creatures, I'm still not wanting to look at them, but I kind of like the robot man beating them up.
They manage to catch the one who's played by the head assistant pushing the cart back in the hospital.
Right.
Fantastic actor, insert name here. He's just like, please let me go.
He's like so extra at this moment. It's hard to like tell if he's just if this is just like something that was directed, because he's like blah, 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 blah.
He's perfectly over the top. I love this guy. He could have been in the movie 20% more and it would have only helped.
And they hear about Princess Mombi.
Well, they want to get to the scarecrow, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, he's like, the only one who could help you with that would be who? Princess Mombi! Ah! Right? And so they, they make him take them to her front door. And then she's like, you got to let him go. And he's like, what? And she's like, you got to let him go. And he's like, you're going to be good, right? And he's like, I'm going to be so good. And, like, he starts to squeak away on his little wheels, and he's just like, I'm gonna be so good.
Behave is specifically what he says,
because yeah.
He does say, I'll behave, and then as they let him go, he says, you behave. And he's just
like every 8-year-old you've let off of the hook ever. Great. Your punishment's over. Your punishment is over. Oh, God.
And so they get to Princess Mombi's castle. They go through the front door and it's dusty, just like Emerald City.
Yeah. When TikTok stomps through, he leaves little circles. His feet are circles. So he leaves little circle prints in the dust. But then he makes it up the stairs, which means he's at least one better than a wheeler.
Right.
Or a Dalek.
Yes. How many times has the Dalek been? I mean, when in the episode of Doctor Who, when you find out that the Daleks can levitate and they're no longer defeated by stairs, like, my world shattered. But anyways, TikTok is not brought down by that.
No. And my note was like, because I was talking about cleaning earlier, I was like, oh, so she just needs to get her cleaner into the, oh, never mind. And they come through into this like sitting area. You hear like lute music being played, mm-hmm. and it's just nothing but a room of mirrors and like candles going. Oh. And it's like clean and gorgeous. But as the cleaner, I was like, that room's a b- to clean.
Yeah. Like no streaks on any of the windows, any of the mirrors, any of the glass, any of the gold accoutrement. Like strewning everything. Okay. Humble brag. I have been to the Castle Versailles in France. And the feeling you get when you walk into a grand ballroom is unlike anything I've ever really felt before. And we as Americans, we don't come across these unless you've gone to like a $40,000 wedding or something like that, which again, we don't come across very often. And like walking into the grand ballroom of the Versailles was as imposing as this scene is, because all you can't as a human being, unless you are somehow so inundated with money and experience and luxury that you just don't see it anymore, you walk into a room like that that's meant to like blow your freaking mind, and all you can do is stare around. Okay, you may be a former cleaner who thinks I would hate to do this, but as a former cleaner, if it's to that level of poshness, you're like, oh, somebody took great care. You know, somebody paid attention so close to the details. This room is mind-blowing. Mirrored columns, golden fixtures on everything, chandeliers, freestanding on the ceiling. It's a 30-foot, 40-foot ceiling.
And it's all practical, too. They didn't draw this in.
Yeah. This is no animation. Somebody made this. My heart went, this exists somewhere, and I want to go to there.
Epic set design.
Yes. I'm sorry. So they walk in. So she and TikTok walk in, and they're both amazed, and they make their way to where the music is coming from the center, back center of the room.
Right. And there's a woman who's just on like a, is that a chaise lounge?
A chaise lounge has one side higher and then like an armless side so that you can kind of lay to your side Roman style on it. They were all the rage back in like late 1800s, early 1900s.
Right. So she's sitting down. She's playing this lute and everything. And Dorothy comes up and she's like, hello, Your Majesty. She's super polite because Dorothy is nothing but polite in this film. Even when she's angry at people, she's still like polite.
Like things happen and she's still the perfect little girl. Like anybody who's mad at her, I know instantly that there's something wrong with them.
Right. This is Princess Mumbi, and she just has this beautiful young face, and she takes the lute down, and she lifts one hand over to Dorothy and says, please help me up. And she's got this, like, cape that is, like, it's all a lot of dark tones, but then you have, like, these, like, spikes jettisoning out of the top of the cape, and I'm like, I want this cape so bad.
And their little jewel tone burst.
Yes. The color in there is very much like their gems.
Yes. And she makes a clinking metally noise, and I cannot help but equate this outfit to anything but a Skeksis.
Oh, yeah.
She's just like clink, 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 clink. And so you see it's beautiful, but severe.
Right.
It's extravagant and impractical. And so, like, you get a lot about this character just from this outfit alone. And she's just, what do they do next?
She like looks at Dorothy's face and then she's like, come with me. And like, she's not really answering any of Dorothy's questions.
She's like, they're hand in hand, which is gross.
Do you remember what she says before she like takes Dorothy away?
She wants a different head.
She needs to change her appearance. She's like, I need to put on something better, or I need to change my appearance. And so that's when she takes Dorothy into this room.
Hand in hand, which is super gross. Oh, by the way, this is where my notes say, Mommy is one fancy bitch.
Yeah. And she goes ahead and she takes Dorothy into this room where it's nothing but lady heads all around her.
In these little windows, and they're these heads on these pedestals. And it's a beautiful effect because, as Jen pointed out, and we had a brief discussion about while watching the film, if you put on like a completely black outfit and then fit this chest piece on the front, you could look like your head was on a pedestal. And then they stick these women in these cabinets. And so they are just sitting there, but it looks very much like Haunted Mansion style, like these heads sitting there, and they all turn and look at her.
As Dorothy's walking in.
Yes.
And there's one spot that doesn't look like it has a head on it. I wonder what that's for.
Is this a mirror? That one? The mirror spot?
No. There's actually one at like
an empty cabinet.
It's essentially an empty cabinet. And then Mumbi goes ahead and she's like, I think I'll go ahead and switch this one out for number four. And Dorothy looks around and she sees a head with a number four, and she sees this lady take off her head.
Just kind of switch it out.
And then put the head onto the pedestal in front of her, the empty one.
Close the cabinet with her fancy key.
Yeah, she's got a red crystal key.
Then she walks over to cabinet four, same key, opens it up, pulls out the head, holds it down to the side. And she's like, what do you think? And Dorothy, not fazed by anything, it seems, goes, I think you're very beautiful.
Yeah. So, like, Dorothy is so much more polite than I would have been. I would be running and screaming. Yeah.
And reasonably so.
Yes.
Today's Nightmare Fuel, brought to you by Frank L. Baum.
Right? So then Mommy puts, the way she puts on her head, it reminds me of, like, toys from the 80s where you would just, like, set something in and then click it into place. And it's a very satisfying, like, you know it's going to stay there sort of way, but, like, that's real gross.
Yeah. And then she like goes over to Dorothy and she does that thing where villains will like grab the chin and be like, oh, look at your face. Well, I mean,
you've heard me rant about this earlier. I don't like people to tell me what to do with my body. You can ask me for stuff, but she goes, come nearer.
Oh, yeah.
And beckons her over. And Dorothy is like, I don't want to do it. And she's like, come nearer. And And then Dorothy walks over, and that's when she does exactly what you're about to describe.
Yeah, she grabs Dorothy by the chin and like looks over one side of her face, and she makes some remarks like, "Oh, well, I mean, you are beautiful in your own way, and maybe if I gave you a few years, you would be prettier." And I'm like, "Firouza Bulk is gorgeous. Shut your dirty mouth."
Right? And now you're going to like assault a minor, and what the hell? So she's like, she goes, "I think I'll keep you around for a few years, and then I'll keep your head for myself or whatever." And Dorothy, in like one of her few acts of defiance, goes, "I think you will not."
Even when she is angry and being defiant, she isn't like, you know, she's still polite as all get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't.
How about a good old f you, Mombi?
That would have been like, again, screaming and running away long before this moment.
Right. Okay. So what happens is Mombi drags her forcefully by the hand, and you don't like it and you shouldn't like it. Drags her into the ballroom towards the tower that she's threatened her with. And that's when Dorothy starts screaming for TikTok. She's like, "TikTok, TikTok, TikTok." And he's like, blah, blah, whatever. It doesn't matter. Attack chicken.
Belina goes and attacks her and just gets right up in her face. And Mombi like grabs her by the feet.
Yeah, we didn't notice any ASPCA approval at the end of this movie. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
I think the chicken's fine.
Not anymore, because it's been a few years.
Yeah, okay. We assume she lived
every
a long, happy
chicken
life.
You've known for 20 years is dead.
Oh, I know you're referencing me, and that hurts.
Do you remember what Mombi says to the chicken?
"I'm going to fry you up and have you for breakfast."
Yes. And then TikTok comes through, and he's like, "I'm going to come and save the day."
Ugh. He starts swinging the pail, the lunch pail that he's still holding, and all of a sudden he's like, "Durk, durk, durk, durk." And yeah. He's like, "Oh, no, it seems that my battle with the Wheelers has wound down my movement mechanism prematurely."
Right.
Or something akin to that.
Right. And so he's stuck, and Dorothy gets thrown into this attic that's just about as dirty as everywhere except for that mirror room.
Everything's dusty.
And that's when she is, I think what it is, she's looking around the room and she sees all these different things. And then this pumpkin on top of a bunch of like, or this pumpkin head starts talking to her. That's it. Okay. Uh-huh. And he's like, "Are you my mom?"
She's like, "What? No."
He's like, "Oh, okay." And then this is Pumpkinhead, who is voiced by Brian Hansen.
And is a gorgeous puppet / animated. Not, he's not animated. He's a pumpkin. He's always a pumpkin. He's a marionette type creature part of the time. And then he is a costumed person part of the time. And sometimes a bit of both, or sometimes neither. But like, he's gorgeously done. He's got a pumpkin head that looks not dissimilar to the pumpkin she was given by the blonde girl earlier. And he's got scrawny twig arms, a bubble shirt with crystal accents on it. He's got two sets of suspenders, a pair of breeches, and like stick legs that poke out of everywhere. And he is amazing. Top three favorite characters.
But he's not really moving too much.
Well, because his head was off.
Yeah.
And his arm and leg are off. And there's not much you can do with one arm and one leg.
Yeah. At this point, my notes are, because his name is Jack, and he's a pumpkin head. So at this point, my notes are like proto Jack Skellington.
100%.
Though Jack Skellington didn't have a pumpkin head, he was called the Pumpkin King.
Yes.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense, because the fashion choices remind me of Sally. The spindliness, the wideness of the mouth and everything all remind me of Jack.
Yeah.
So like, I think headcanon, he's their baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like, Dorothy starts putting him back together. And that's when I was like, no, maybe this is proto Sally. And I was like, no, they're both there. He's their kid.
100%. She's like, "How did you come into being?" He's like, "Well, my mom made me to scare
Mombi away,
and she didn't, but like, she's like, "Well, how did she make you alive?" And she's like, Jack is like, "Well, she sprinkled me with powder of life." And she's like, "What does that do?" He's like, "You sprinkle it on anything and it comes alive." She's like, "Where's that?" And he's like, because he's a wealth of knowledge for being stupid. He's like, "Oh, it's in cabinet 31 with Mombi's original head." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so I'm a self-important, super vain, super villain type. I am super gorgeous. I want to be eternally gorgeous. I want to collect these faces that I may wear at my whim, because apparently the consciousness is the same even if the head changes, which is physics I don't want to get into. But like, here's my question to you, Lydia. Why is Mombi in cabinet 31?
Because her head isn't prettier than, or isn't as pretty as all of the other heads.
Okay, wait.
So that is her original head.
Yes, but it's like midway through the range. Wouldn't you make yourself number one or number 60? I don't know how many heads she's got. Why is she in the middle?
She has 30 heads. She was promised 30 heads. We find that out later at the very end. And so her 31st head was her original head and probably the one that she thought was the most ugly.
Okay, because I remember the numbers counting up on the left side, but I didn't know if they counted down from midpoint on the right side.
One for each day of October.
So Dorothy's like, okay, I got a plan.
Well, he asks if she'll put him together first.
Oh, yeah.
And she does. She ties his legs and arms on, and she helps him stand up. And this is where I'm like, his voice, his movements, yes, please.
If this had been a musical, you know his song would have been the best song of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I kind of miss that about this, is that it wasn't a musical.
Mm-hmm.
A little sad.
Yeah. So Dorothy comes up with a plan to get the Powder of Life. But first, they also need a way out of here.
Well, she has to save TikTok.
And you can see as he's talking about the Powder of Life, she's looking around and there's this like green moose head on the wall. And there's all these like couches around and there's like palm fronds.
Yes, there's all of this detritus up there that she can use to her own means. And she's looking at it in childlike wonder. But from an objective perspective, none of this makes sense.
Right.
Because like, here's the thing. Mombi doesn't know that she has the ability to get out of the tower.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know this at this point. I don't know how Dorothy knows this at this point. I mean, like, yeah, she's got to rescue TikTok, but why don't they just walk out the front door? And I think it's because she's looked out the window and knows she has to cross the deadly desert.
To the Gnome King's Mountain.
Right. I just don't think... it's a jump in logic. And you mm-hmm. don't see it until she works out the plan.
Yeah. Did we mention that Mombi or someone had said that the Scarecrow, which is the one that Dorothy's trying to find, was taken by the Gnome King? Did we mention that was mentioned in the movie? I don't know if we've mentioned that.
Probably not. We mentioned that he wasn't found.
Right.
And you know what? The Wheeler might have said it in his speech.
And that the only way to get to the Gnome King was probably why they went to
Mombi.
To Mombi, yeah. Okay.
Okay, so she and Pumpkinhead go downstairs to enact the plan that we don't know what it is. And they walk into the ballroom, which is now darkened because Mombi's gone to bed. And he's like, hey, Dorothy, can I ask you something? And she's like, shh, 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 shh. And she's like, what? And he goes, I know you're not my mom, but can I call you mom?
And I'm like, not now, Jack. It's the worst possible time.
And she's like, we have to be quiet. But yes, you can call me mom.
Again, super polite.
Like, she lets her needs be known, is super polite about it. Her manners are something to emulate. So she's like, shh, yes, call me mom. They walk over to TikTok and she's like, she goes over and she goes, can you hear me? Don't say anything. How is he supposed to say that he knows? Like, does he blink twice? Those big, beautiful blue eyes? Like, I don't know. But she's like, I'm going to wind you up. And then you're going to go with, this is Pumpkinhead. Like, okay, so he can move gyroscopically. His body turns, even though she hasn't wound him up yet. And he looks up at a Scarecrow. And she's like, this is Scarecrow. This is Jack. Sorry. You're going to go upstairs with him. He knows the plan. I got to go get something. And she winds him up and they go away. And now we split between these two scenes. We've got those guys who are upstairs in the tower. And we've got her creeping into Mombi's personal space.
Right. And she's going through the head museum and all of the heads are asleep. And then we cut to...
Well, she walks past the body first.
Oh, yeah. The body is asleep in the bed.
And the body doesn't have a head on because why would you wreck your face right on them pillows when you got perfectly good pillars to put them on?
She goes and gets the key that's wrapped around the body's wrist.
Yes. It's tied on with a little bow. So she unties it. The body shifts. She's like, we had that really standard moment. Mm-hmm. And then she gets the key and she makes it into the headroom where all of the heads are asleep. Like, out of 31 heads, nobody's awake.
Right. And TikTok and Jack are going back upstairs and TikTok's like, I probably understand the plan better than you do.
Okay. The exact quote is, because I love it so much, Jack goes, did you understand that, TikTok? And he goes, I understand it better than you do.
Yeah.
It's pretty cute.
Yeah. And so Dorothy's going through all of these like heads. They're all asleep. She opens up the mirror door with the red key. And as she's like, I think like this is like where that, again, that tension comes into play because they cut between Dorothy like creeping through there and Jack and TikTok putting together what is essentially a flying moose couch.
Right. So TikTok's like, get that head off the wall. Jack's like, what is that? He goes, that's a gump. Or no, Belina probably says, what's that? That's a gump. Tie it to the front of these two. They shove two couches, two Shea Lounge looking things together, and they tie the head to the front. They start putting palm frond wings on. But as TikTok is belting orders, he starts to make no sense.
Yeah. Tie your legs together.
All right, I'll tie my, because he's like, you're obviously smarter than me. Obviously, I need to tie my legs together. And he's just like, make sure you hoist the ballast. And he's like, hoist the, whoa. And he falls over his, Jack falls over his feet. It's delightful.
Yeah.
I was just like, what are you talking about? And now we cut back to Dorothy.
Yeah. And she when she opens the door, there's a head in there.
Sleeping.
And then there's the powder of life, conveniently marked, by the way. And when Dorothy goes to reach for it,
knocks over a bottle.
And she wakes up the head, and that wakes up everybody else.
The Mombi's head wakes up and she goes, Dorothy! I'll give you something to work with, Jen. Dorothy girl! Dorothy girl! Like, it doesn't sound like, it wasn't, okay, this is my impersonation. Like, I would be like, Dorothy Gale.
But she's also probably trying to wake up the body and the other heads.
That, you know, you're probably right. Because, yeah. Because the body does wake up. And now it, okay, whereas it moved around gracefully as I've witnessed blind people in a space that they're very familiar with move as if they had sight place to place, right? Mm-hmm. But now the body's startled awake. It knows that there's someone in the room. It knows that Dorothy's in the room, but doesn't know where in that room that is, because none of the voices are like, it's over by case 4. It's over by case 10. Yeah. It's moved over to case 11, where the body would know where to go. Like, this is just my problem solving. Like, mm-hmm. Dorothy just kind of elbows past it and like books it through the room.
But before she does, she grabs the powder of life, uh-huh. and she then shuts the door that has the head in it and then locks it, but she keeps the key.
Yes.
So that's important because that gives them more time.
Yes, it does. So she runs into the room, the ballroom that's full of mirrors, right? And she can't remember which of the mirrors opens up to let her out. And she's like, I don't know what to do. Like, she runs to one and then a second mirror. And then she like stands there and she's like, I'm a little girl in a room of mirrors. And I have no idea where to go. Mm-hmm. And so then we hear like a...
There's like this little bit of a light on one of the mirrors.
Yes. Okay. And this is important for me screaming later. But there's like a water-like shimmer of blue light on one of the mirrors. And then it kind of restructures into the look of a girl. And then she like realizes it's the blonde girl. And she's like, oh, shit. That's the door. And she runs over and there's a f***ing handle on that door, Lydia. And she like clicks it open and then starts running up the tower steps. Mm-hmm. This is where it probably cuts back to Mommy's body raising up a chair, mm-hmm. and smashing the silver mirror that covers cabinet 31. And then like Mombi's head screams with like a little shard of glass in her hair, which I thought was a nice detail. And then the body grabs this head and pulls it out. And it looks like a, okay, for all this movie got right, it looks like a mannequin head with a bad wig on it. Just ripped from a window. They're like, yeah. I feel like the stage direction was like, just do it fast. Nobody will notice. It's really bad.
So Dorothy goes back upstairs and she's like, you guys aren't done yet?
Yeah. And Jack is like, he's not making any sense. And she runs over and she's like, his brain mechanisms wound all the way down. Jack says, if his brain ran down, how can he talk? And she turns around and goes, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, my delivery's terrible on that. It happens all the time.
And so they wind up TikTok. They get the last of the lounge together, like, you know, put together with rope and everything. And
they haphazardly do it because she's got to start going around with the powder of life and turning everything on, essentially.
Yeah. And so the gump comes to life and he's like, oh, I don't remember everything he says.
No, he says a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But they're like, flap your wings. We got to get out of here. He's like, I don't have wings.
Oh, wait, I do.
Yeah, you do now. And he's like, oh. And he starts flapping his palm fronds.
Yeah.
Gump is voiced by Lyle Conway, who also was a puppeteer in Little Shop of Horrors.
Ooh.
Little shop of horrors, little shop of terror. If you'd like that reference, you can go to Little Shop of... I love that that episode. Definitely check out Little Shop of Horrors. Okay, so they crack open the window. They all but Jack jump on, and then the door busts open. Mombi's there, and then she's like, "What?
Dorothy Gale?"
And then she keeps screaming her full name.
It's almost like in Oz, people just say, "I've been Dorothy."
Right? Like, "Ah, oh, Dorothy." I mean, the bad guys do.
Right.
Anyways, so they start to fly out the window, and Jack grabs on at the end and just kind of, okay, so it's a person in a suit who jumps on to like almost the end of it, and then they cut to them like green screening through the sky, and then it's a puppet and they're kind of like flailing his legs for him. And although it's a nitpicky detail, it's very interesting to see them having transitioned to get that effect of like just like loose-limbed lankiness flailing through space.
And Mombi then goes outside and she tells the Wheelers that they need to go and get them, which, you know, then proceeds to this chase sequence of Dorothy on top of this flying contraption, which is so much like a thing a kid would put together.
Yes. And it's not until the until Mombi goes and wakes up all the Wheelers that I, as an adult, was like, oh, the Wheelers are the flying monkeys.
Right.
I was like, oh, duh. Like, super duh. Like, da-da-da-da.
Yeah. And so they go and they chase after him. They get Jack onto the contraption and everything. And they just really need to fly straight ahead. But eventually, they hit the deadly desert. And the Wheelers hit the deadly desert, too.
Like, six of them fly off the edge of a cliff into the sand where, let's be frank, wheels don't work very well.
Right.
But also, they do some really great work where they flash from a Wheeler sprawled onto the sand to a carving, a sand carving of a Wheeler. That then breaks apart.
Yeah.
It's pretty satisfying.
The deadly desert is legit terrifying. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Have we noted that the third head we've seen, head 31, Mombi's original head, is the nurse's head?
Oh, yeah, we didn't. It's the same actress.
It's Nurse Wilson.
Yeah, Jean Marsh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've come around on that one.
Right. And so the chase sequence is done. You know, they just got to keep going. And even though the Gump doesn't feel like he was well put together, he's like, yeah, I mean, I guess I could do this. I mean, he just came to life. So
Dorothy's like, the Gnome's Mountain was right ahead of us. So if you just fly straight, we should get there just fine.
Right.
And he's like, I don't think I could turn if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And this is the part where, doesn't he say, the last thing I remember was I was grazing in a forest and then I heard a loud noise. And then I woke up here with you guys.
Right.
And this is where my notes the second time around go, they have sports hunting for sentient creatures in Oz.
Yep.
He's basically Bambi's mom.
That's problematic because it's not like a human doesn't talk to Gumby. Gumby's. Sorry, I was talking about Gumby earlier today. No human talks to Bambi's mom. It is debatable that animal language is different than human language, but that is not the case in Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And Gump actually means a human fool. Like, it's an actual, that's like, it's a human term.
Yeah, like Forrest Gump style.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
I mean.
We also talked about how, like, if all of him remembers something before, do the couches remember being something before?
Okay, so is it because they were all together that they're one sentient creature? Because I can get away with the head coming in and out of connection with them and being, like, the whole thing. But in the scene where she's sprinkling the powder of life on them, she goes through and sprinkles each part with these little animated green dots that are delightful. But it seemed like each individual part was coming alive and that the head was one of the last parts to come together. So are we talking about two alive Shea Lounges that are somehow conjoined twins now? Is it one creature? I mean, like, certainly Jack's body parts aren't sentient alone. When his arm was off, it was just an inanimate stick. So does it have to be attached to the head thing?
Well, I think later on when we see them detach the head from the couch towards the end of the film, you know, the head still stays alive, but it's really hard to actually, I kind of equate it as like if you lost a limb, your consciousness would still be in here because you haven't lost your head.
All right.
And you have like the bulk of your torso. And because of the fact that maybe that's how they're justifying it, because like this is a fictional film. And if I just had my head, I would still be dead.
And the idea of one of the Pomprons flying off and having sentience as it landed in the deadly desert and slowly turned to sand, would it hurt you?
No.
It would hurt me.
It would probably, maybe.
It would hurt my feelings.
Yeah. Because like I would see it as like losing like a limb. Your limb doesn't continue to live. And it doesn't look like that's the case with Jack.
Right. Well, I started at the beginning of this conversation was that it would be an individual thing and I would feel bad about it. But I accept your, and get this, headcanon.
So they're flying and it's night and Dorothy's just had a lot going on. So she goes ahead and puts her head down and sleeps in the couch.
Oh, and Belina does too. Mm-hmm. And Jack drapes something over her as a blanket. She's it only took a day and a half, almost drowning, getting almost killed a couple times, ending up in a fictional land somewhere in your imagination, maybe, to finally get over your insomnia.
Right.
Fantastic. There's hope for all of us.
Jack does do this sort of Norman Bates thing where he says, "Good night, Mom."
Oh, God. Every time Jack says mom, my skin was like, I don't need to be on your body anymore. Let me see if I can crawl away. Ugh.
And so Dorothy sleeps and then we see the Wheelers go back to Mombi and she's playing the lute again with her original head. Mm-hmm. And they come up and they say that, you know, she escaped and she's over the deadly desert and making her way to the Gnome King. And so that's when Mombi gets angry again. And
is there like an underground tunnel all the way from Mombi's place to the Gnome King?
Obviously, because we see it.
Well, I mean, like, I just didn't know if that's all the whole of the thing of it was.
Right. Well, the Gnome King that we find out later on can manipulate a lot of stuff.
Oh.
So it makes sense that, you know, he could very easily just be like, yep, it's there now.
Okay, I'm cool with that. But now, I mean, now it's morning. And is this where, like, the whole deal starts to fall apart?
Yeah, essentially.
So Gump has been tied together shoddily. And he starts to fall apart. And in order to, like, I think, does she almost, like, Dorothy almost falls off or whatever? And so, like, Jack has to go to grab at her, but then his head falls off, something like that?
Yeah, so the ropes that are holding two couches together, they start to unravel, and so TikTok grabs one group that's unraveling, and then Jack goes to grab another group that's unraveling, and his head is down, and so that's what causes his head to fall off, and then Dorothy's like, you need to turn around, Gump, so we can go around and get it, but, like, gravity would not actually work that way unless they went down.
Right. Well, to his credit, Gump does start to nosedive, right? Mm-hmm. But here's where my notes are like, I don't think terminal velocity agrees with this. Because, right, like, even if they're going full force down, he's been falling for the better part of a minute until they get around to actually following him. And then she manages to grab his head and, like, pull it back onto his body, right?
Right. So they would have had to, have, like, make a nosedive in the area and they'd have to go faster than the head was falling.
Right. And it really doesn't matter because it's movie magic. But, yeah, like, they end up not being able to pull out of this. Well, they almost pull out of it. But as they try to upright, like, ropes are slipped. The things fall apart. And then they all kind of just drop out of the sky.
Right. Everything just, like, comes apart. And as they're falling down, like, every, you see, like, part of the couches, like, one of the couches is falling down. You see, like, everybody individually falling down. And then they land on top of a rocky surface. Dorothy lands on one of the couches.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to point out that Fairuza Balk does her own stunts, and this was done on the 11th take. She finally landed on the 11th take. Little 10-year-old girl doing her own stunts.
Oh, my God. Okay, so, like, the beige couch lands. She lands on it, squat on her bottom. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look terribly dangerous, but, like, that must have sucked, especially to do it 11 times.
Right.
As we're facing the screen, Gump lands to the left. They're on the mountainside. They've made it. Luckily, they didn't land in the desert. So there's Gump to the left, Fairuza lands on the Shea Lounge center first, and then TikTok lands upside down, mid to the left.
Yeah.
And then Pumpkinhead to the right, and his head is upside down for whatever reason.
Yeah. And so they, you know, gather themselves, and we
Jack is like, why are you guys all upside down?
Yeah.
But, that was cute.
But they're like kind of gathering themselves, and you see that rock face kind of like show itself again, like away from the group.
Yes. And then snitch face, he goes to report to the Gnome King, who then eventually shows up on the mountainside as they're trying to assemble themselves.
Right. And he's like, she brought a small army. And I'm like, my note said small army equals random people you meet along the way.
Okay. And my notes, mirroring yours, say, I like the idea of my weird small army making me powerful.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the we're all weird people and we're going to create our own family sort of thing from, you know, like Howl's Moving Castle.
Yes. There's your birth family and then there's your chosen family. And it's not that your birth family isn't important and it doesn't mean that they don't mean the world to you. But that being said, the people you choose to engage with and have in your life on the daily is a huge deal. And you can have lots of success and you can have lots of failure. Relationships are hard and they can be brittle and things that you think will last forever don't. And like, the change and flux of that is very hard. And so, like, no way is becoming an adult, like, easy. But there's this idea that comes from childhood that you find this person and they belong to you. And although they never, like, originally, like, familially belong to you, now they are your people. Like, I have friendships from decades ago mm-hmm. in this very room who mean the world to me. And they're chosen people. They're not somebody who was assigned to me by some social construct. I mean, it's all social construct, but you know what I mean? Like,
there's a difference between the family that you're given, who you can definitely love, but maybe don't have the things in common that you would with your found family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you can actually have a relationship with people based on commonality, based on your own, like this is the decision that I have made to, you know, have this as movies are kind of a big part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot have this kind of conversation with my biological family that I can have with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, this is therapy.
Yeah.
This is our free therapy time. Thank you, guys. Yeah. You can spend $67 an hour and send it to Patreon at Chuckle.
We just have that one. We have like two levels, $1 and like $650. And this is your like therapy.
That sounds really wrong.
Yeah.
TikTok is known as the Royal Army of Oz as well. So it's not just, there is the immediate familial, everybody supports and gets behind Dorothy, but there's also TikTok who lives, not lives, but he's...
I'm very proud of my lifelessness.
Yes. He's a part of Oz in such a way that, like, Oz doesn't need an army so much that they only have one robot as their army. Like, they never really need him mm-hmm. because it's always a peaceful environment. So he can shut down for years on end, and nobody would, you know, blink an eye.
Everyone's turned to stone, Jen. They couldn't blink an eye.
Yeah, da, 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 da.
They're all weeping angels now.
Oh, my God.
So they're talking, they're trying to like get their bearings and everything. The rock snitch goes and tells them about Dorothy being at the Gnome King's door. And he's like, well, what about the chicken? Because that's his greatest weakness. And he's like, I don't know. He's like, well, go find out.
I don't know why the king is so mad about the chicken. But then the rock snitch is like, I don't see any chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And between you, me, and the rocks in the wall that aren't observing for the king.
I'm not entirely sure he looked.
Belina is inside of Jack the Pumpkinhead.
Yeah.
She's just hanging out in a pumpkin. Hey, yeah. Not mad about it. Worked for, what was that nursery rhyme with a pumpkin guy? Oh God, it's gonna, he had a wife who lived in a pumpkin? No.
It wasn't the old lady who lived in the shoe.
No, it's a guy who's got a wife who lives in a pumpkin. And they used to have it in the Enchanted Village. Not Enchanted Village. There was Imagination Village or whatever.
I don't remember.
Out in the middle of nowhere out here.
And this isn't Peter Pumpkin Eater?
Had a wife and couldn't keep her.
Oh, okay.
Peter Pumpkin Eater had a wife but couldn't keep her. He put her in a pumpkin shell and there he kept her very well. Peter Pumpkin Eater had another and didn't love her. Peter learned to read and spell and then he loved her very well.
Peter was polyamorous. And we accept lifestyles even if we don't engage in them. But
so he ultimately had two wives, one that he kept at home and then one that he didn't keep at that pumpkin home. But it was the wife that enforced him to like learn how to read and write. How did Peter get like so many dames?
I don't know, but I can imagine Jack the Pumpkinhead saying, oh, keep Peter away from me.
He sounds like a real creep. But But he is getting on quite well with Belina in his head, who yes. remains fairly quiet except for a few times where she peeks out.
Right. But of course, they're like trying to figure out how to like get into the Gnome King when he's just like, oh, hello. Oh, the Rock Snitch says that he can't find Belina anywhere. And so the Rock King's feeling pretty good about himself. So he goes ahead and he shows up on the rock in mm-hmm. front of them.
Mm-hmm. The Rock King is voiced by the Doctor.
Right. Then, oh, and the Rock King is actually the Gnome King that we've been referencing this whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
they have an exchange and he gets mad and the ground starts to shake.
They have an exchange about, like, you have the scarecrow, and he says, well, what do you think we should do if one person has one thing and another person wants to take it? And Dorothy eventually comes to say, well, we would take that thing by force. And he says, you and what army? And she says, we have an army right here. And then he thinks that's the most hilarious thing.
Well, yeah, because what they have said before, and I don't know if we've iterated, is that the Gnome King took all of the emeralds from Emerald City and the Scarecrow. And he took them all back to the mountain because the emeralds were his to begin with, and he feels they were stolen. And that's why when she's like, well, you have our Scarecrow. And he's like, well, so he's justifying him taking back the emeralds with the same logic of her wanting to take back the Scarecrow.
Right. He's kind of being ambiguous about it, being like, oh, so you think that if someone took something, they should give it back. Well, what happens if they don't want to take that back? Which is kind of parallel to what he was experiencing with the emeralds. So.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. Right. And we're going to find this again throughout the next 87 pages and four more parts of this podcast.
Right.
But the Gnome King, I find fairly reasonable.
Yeah, but still that kind of makes him just like up there as far as villains go. For
a logical villain mm-hmm. is a sympathetic villain.
Right.
Like, whereas Mombi, we've only seen as this monster.
Who just is, like, really angry all the time.
Yeah, she wants what she wants, how she wants it, and it doesn't really matter who she steps on to get there. Mm-hmm. The king might be a little more machinacious.
He's like Jigsaw. He gives her options.
Well, yeah, because here's the thing. He's probably a god type, if those things do exist in this universe, right? But he's looking for a game. He's looking for entertainment. He's looking for fulfillment. He wants to be justified and righteous. And he has to go through certain motions to get there. Mombi is like, this is what I want. And I want it right now. And this is how I can get it. Done deal. And just dusts her hands off. He's like, well, I've got what I want. And you're here to pester me. But there's also this prophecy. And also, you know, I must be bored or whatever. Because he has to go through this big production.
There are no more worlds to conquer.
Oh, that might be a good way to say it.
Yeah, yeah. So he shakes the ground and it breaks open and Dorothy falls right through there. And as she's falling, that's when he's explaining everything about how all of the gems come from his mountain. And so how must it feel to have someone come in and dig around and take things that his gnomes created? Like all of the emeralds in Emerald City. And Dorothy is like, but you have so much. And he's like, that's not the point. And I'm like, okay. So like there are moments where I'm like, okay, so is this like redistribution of wealth or is this just like a villain who's like wanting to like make a good point? Like I should be allowed to keep my hoard.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing. I think that there's a certain level of rich that you should get to and then just not anymore. Right? If you have more money than you can literally spend in your lifetime, maybe that's enough money, or at least you should be taxed on par with regular people at this point.
Right.
Which is terrible. And I got people in my life who would yell at me about that. That being said, there's a part of me that's like very strict line, like what is yours and what is mine. And like, if you transgress that, like,
well,
you're wrong.
In the real world, equivalent for us would be either generational wealth or capitalists like Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates. And if you want to talk about the capitalists, I can talk about the capitalists and why them hoarding money is ultimately wrong for society. But I could also, like, I will state this as I have stated several times in the past. No economic system can survive unless money gets put back into the populace, whether that's through redistribution of wealth, mm-hmm. whether that's through the rich going ahead and actually utilizing the trickle-down effect, because the trickle-down effect does not work if the rich hold on to their wealth.
Yes.
But, I mean, if you're just talking about, like, these are things and Oz doesn't necessarily need the emeralds in order to survive, and they're literally taking stuff from him, I'm still like, but then that's kind of a good point, you know?
If the solution had been posed, I'm going to keep my emeralds, but I'll make all of your people not rocks anymore. she would have shook hands on that and she would have been done.
Right.
Because I think that to Dorothy, it would be completely fair. Oh, you're right. These were your emeralds. But the larger ethical question for her is the people.
Right.
That's all she really cares about.
Right. If
she's never like, oh, the pretty rocks. She's like, right. Oh, could they not be rocks? Not,
right.
Not the emeralds. They can be rocks. But can my friends not be rocks anymore?
Right. And as she's falling, like, I don't think it's mostly about redistribution of wealth. I really don't think that that's it. I don't think the emeralds are necessarily there. But the Gnome King did have an opportunity to go ahead and just be like, okay, I'm going to take all of my rocks back. And then I'm going to go ahead and turn all of you back into mm-hmm. human. And if you come after me again, the next time I go ahead and turn you into rocks, I'm not going to turn you back into humans.
Right, right, right. And it's just the autonomy of state.
Right.
And I think my notes here say, while this incredibly great conversation about ownership is happening, she's in this bad green screen floating through these emerald crystals.
It's very 80s.
It's very, very 80s. And my notes are like, the Gnome King's making a lot of sense here. If you're really listening, he's making a lot of sense through here. But then my notes also say, still? Eat the rich.
Yeah. And when Dorothy, like, gets down, she's done falling. She, like, lands in the lap of the scarecrow. He catches her. And he's just like, Dorothy. And she's just like, scarecrow. And then he's just like, poof, gone.
Yes. She's like, oh, you really do it? Well, I mean, that's good confirmation. The king, Gnome King, actually has
mm-hmm.
the scarecrow.
Right. And he was like, oh, thank you for reminding me. I meant to do that a long time ago. He's now an ornament in my place.
So this scene that we're coming up to screwed me up as a child. Can I tell you that I obsess about details about things about people? It's not like super bad, but like I've always tried to look for the essence of a person really quick because I'm afraid that I will need to identify them in a room full of objects where their like defining characteristic is such a unique thing to them that if I'd only been a little bit more observant, I would be able to select them from the existential crisis that this has instilled in me since childhood.
Yeah. But we don't get to that just yet, but we're getting close.
But it's about that. He's like, he's become an ornament in my room over there.
Yeah. And Dorothy's just like, he didn't take the emeralds. They were there when he came, which is a great point on Dorothy's end.
She's weeping and his hand comes out and she is petted by a rock hand.
Yeah.
Now, every time, and we should state this now because we're going to have to reference it over and over again. Every time the Rock King changes a person into an ornament in his room, he becomes more, I want to say human, but I think it's not that he's less rock. It's just that he's more refined.
He's not stuck in a mountain itself.
Yeah, he's more articulated. Before, he was just a face on a rock wall. Then he absorbs the scarecrow, and he becomes a more 3D mm-hmm. face on a rock wall.
Right.
And now he's managed to be a hand, and mm-hmm. he's upset that she's really upset, which is, I think, an interesting facet to him.
Right.
He's like, you know what I think would make you feel better?
Your friends.
Yeah, because they fell through. I think that they fell through maybe at the same time, and she was shunted off somewhere different. Mm-hmm. But then, because they tied Gump back onto a couch, they had a whole exchange about it. So he's able to walk around, but he's just a couch and a head now. And then there's Jack with Secret Belina. Mm-hmm. And then there's TikTok as well.
Right.
So now they're a team of four again.
Mm-hmm. And he, the Gnome King is just pretty much like a face in the side of the wall at this point. Mm-hmm. But I think he has a little bit more form. He still feels like a lot of claymation.
Yes. This is where my notes are like 100% on the claymation work on this.
But like, and like all throughout this entire exchange, he's like, you know, like Dorothy tries to like go up to the rock face when right before her friends show up and he just like disappears into the rock. And I'm like, that guy's pretty powerful. This is like a legit villain.
Yes. Well, here's why I called him a god earlier, because like he does a couple things later on that just are so omnipotent-y.
Mm-hmm. Omniscient.
No, he doesn't seem all-knowing. Okay, so I love those words, by the way, because we use them a lot in church, right? Omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. So omniscient, he knows everything. Omnipresent means he could be anywhere at any time. But omnipotent means that he's able to control space and matter. So
right.
He's an omnipotent character, but he's not omniscient or omnipresent.
Right.
Part of his goal is to become fully human so that he can walk the grounds of Oz. Right now, he's stuck to his mountain.
Well, and the rocks that he sends his minions to.
And what I think is interesting about this character is he's always had the same heart. He was just given an advantage through the ruby slippers that we're about to learn about in just a moment here, without that advantage that he's given, that little extra step of power, he wouldn't have the power that he has now.
Because he was just this kind of thing in a mountain collecting emeralds.
Well, it's always like it's referred to like he was a very powerful wizard. So it's almost like with how everything plays out, I kind of wonder if he was like cursed. Like maybe he was a powerful wizard. He ended up getting cursed to stay in the side of the mountain. And now he's trying to break the curse because he was talking about like, I just need like one more soul from Oz in order to be fully human. He says that later on with Mombi.
Wonder what the lore is in Oz. Yeah. You could probably find this in one of the books.
Yeah, and there's probably some sort of wiki out there from somebody who's much more obsessed. But here's the thing, applauders, and I'm speaking to you directly now. We just rant about movies. We have collected Sean facts from Sean. We'll be corrected by Sean and Maddie in Shock Talk, which is going to be new for your ear holes at the end of this month. You maybe listen to it on Halloween or not, whatever. But right now, we're talking about the experience of watching this film, the enjoyment we have had, possible knowledge that we have. Possible knowledge that we have might be the name of our cover band of the theme songs of various films that we've watched. It's a never-ending story.
That's our first cover song.
Right?
There are probably like 2 dozen Wizard of Oz or Oz-related books.
And that's what we're saying.
And is not that all of them are written by Frank L. Baum.
This is also the thing. Like, there are certain things about texts that I enjoy. Like, Applauders, you can sign off now, but J.K. Rowling is canceled for me right now. I can't stand the woman. She's transphobic and she can eat a whole bag of dicks. That being said, like a very Potter musical, like satire on her work that is way funnier and much more rewatchable for me than her work still gets to exist for me. So it's difficult as a fan of any given genre that has an expansive universe or at least expansive different deviations thereupon to like whittle it away. Like, we could research this. Applauders, feel free to send us all the money, and I will spend 60 hours a week researching all the things, and it will be amazing how much information you get. But regardless, you won't get the full scope of everything that has been attributed to this work forever, so we have to limit to our experience, our ability to research, and to still enjoy our therapy session with each other as we figure ourselves out. Okay. So
the Gnome King is all like, oh, well, you know, if you want to go ahead and save everybody or free the Scarecrow, we can make a game out of this where you can go in and try and guess the ornament. And if you guess wrong, then you guess wrong too many times.
You get 3 guesses.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's nice. 3 is pretty good.
Yeah. And after all of your guesses are used up, if you don't get them, then you're just nothing but, or he doesn't even say like the, but it does, he says it comes with a price, but he doesn't say what that price is.
And they're like,
nobody
cool,
else.
Cool, cool. 3 chances. Yeah. Awesome. Comes with a price.
He says, well, how about the Gump go in first?
I don't have any hands.
You can use your antlers. And I was like, oh, well, guess next time I'm just not going to bring it up.
Right. And then as he shuffles off on his little Shea lounge feet,
there's the gate opens up with these like claymation hands.
It's glorious. Mm-hmm. But as he shuffles through the gate into the ornament room, Gump says, I should have quit while I was ahead.
Yada-da-da-da-da.
I hate it so much, but if it wasn't there, I'd be so mad.
And so he's like, well, let's have some refreshments while we wait. And so they sit down. There are these like little cakes, and Dorothy tries one because she, you know, needs food to eat. And there are these cups with like some dry ice. Well, it's logistically they use dry ice, but there's like bubbling things in there.
Yeah, what is it? It's lime cake. And she takes a bite and she's like, delicious.
Yeah. There's some like rumblings that go on, but nobody's like thinking anything of it. No, nobody's asking any questions. And then there's this like large crack of lightning, lights go out, and they're like, what was that? Oh, it's your friend. He guessed wrong too many times, and now he's an ornament.
What?
He's like, you didn't say anything like that. And he was like, you didn't ask. And I'm like, legit villain.
Yes. And 3 guesses is pretty good, and he didn't kill them. He just turned them into an ornament.
I don't remember him saying that there was 3 guesses.
Well, he said 3.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. I didn't write it down. Yeah. It doesn't really matter.
3 is pretty typical in these kind of stories, so it makes sense.
Yeah, and if it was more, it'd take too long, and if it was too little, it wouldn't be enough of a try.
Mm-hmm. Right. So then he's like, oh, how about you go in next, Pumpkinhead?
Yeah.
And then he goes in and TikTok makes the comment of, I think Jack has a lot of fine qualities, but thinking is not one of them.
And this is where I picked up on, and this is the thing, this is like number three having been turned into an ornament or whatever. Okay, two turned into an ornament within our recent sessions that I realized, because this is the one where he flashes and now he has human eyeballs in a face that is still claymation.
Yeah, it's when they're waiting for the Gump, he is still like stuck in the wall. But then when he is talking with them after Jack goes through, he's a lot more human.
Yes, but after this last one, he gets human eyeballs.
Right. It looks more like the actor in makeup, less than claymation.
But it is claymation because the actor in makeup doesn't come for at least one more absorption.
Yeah, it's after TikTok goes in there.
Yeah. Well, I missed one in my order. So it was, I wrote it down, but yeah. I wrote it down poorly. So Scarecrow, Gump. After Pumpkinhead gets absorbed, that's when he looks fairly human. But I think he gets the most human when, I feel like it's when TikTok wears down.
It's like while TikTok is making his decisions, he's in, because it's just him and Dorothy. Yeah. And that's when he brings out the ruby slippers, which he looks pretty fabulous in, by the way.
He does. He's all gray. And then he's got these super sparkly slippers on that he pulls up. Okay, so what happens is Pumpkinhead loses. He says something that I wrote in my notes, but I can't make out because it's something like, I have always named my intercessors or intercession. I can't read it, but I was like, girl, same. And now I'm like, what did I say? I don't know. It doesn't matter. So there's a rumble. Oh, by the way, the drink that they're having is liquid molten silver. And they are all like, maybe not that one. Like Dorothy eats. She's the only one who eats. She eats the lime cake, says it's delicious. She pushes away the molten silver. She's like, maybe not that. Maybe, you know, it's always okay to push away a drink and be like, maybe not that one. I don't want that right now. But the king stops suddenly in the middle of their conversation. And it's just like, oh, it seems your friend TikTok has completely stopped moving in the ornament room. And he's like, you should go in and, you know, wind him up. And while you're in there, you might as well make your choices, which I think is convenient even in the moment. Mm-hmm. And this is around the time where he shows her his shoes.
Yeah, he's like, you came back. Why did you come back to Oz? Was it for these? And that's when he shows the ruby slippers.
He says, I could wish you back home right now.
You've completed part two of our review of 1985's Return to Oz, a Plotter. We're approaching the ending of the plot walkthrough. But we still have plenty more housekeeping notes to drop on you via our shocked and applaudable moments. Looking to be swept away into more mindscapes of curiosity? Never a Straight Answer covers a wide range of topics, including mysteries and conspiracy theories. And they just covered the case of John Titor, a man out of time. And in Shoot the Flick, Frankie just introduced Scott to another Disney October treat, Hocus Pocus. You can find links to these shows in this episode's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and citizen near the Emerald City of Washington State, Jen. Did you know that Shocked and Applaud has several ways to welcome your feedback? We might even read your message or Apple Podcast reviews in our upcoming episode of Shock Talk at the end of the month. You can send an email to us using shockedandapplaud@gmail.com. Or visit us at Facebook at Shocked and Applaud, or Twitter and Instagram at Shocked Applaud. We're only 1 week away from our conclusion of this nightmare fuel of a children's movie, and we can't wait to share our final thoughts before tapping our heels together. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.